Welcome to another episode of It's Not About You with Jamal, Marianne, and Cousin Todd.
You know what I'm saying? Like, actually, it will verbally tell you that you fucked up. I've had brownie, and here's the thing: they taste terrible. But let me tell you something: like the after effect, I love it. That's what I love about Seattle, because I was high a good portion of the time, like after shows, in between like days of the weeks. Like, you have to know where you're gonna be when you get high, because sometimes that high, you know, can last an entire weekend, and you got to go to work Monday, and you got to be like, okay, I gotta, you know, I gotta show up to work and act like I'm not high, which is, depending on what you're eating, can be difficult. But yeah, man, I don't think I've ever taken anything in Washington State, and I was like, oh, this was a dud. No, I knew that I had to go home first, take a shower, you know, get, you know, watch Darkwing Duck or something, and then just start eating cookies.
Let's get into it.
That is my Sunday afternoon well into the night.
Dude.
Yeah, I love doing shrooms and watching cartoons.
Let me tell you, as someone who doesn't normally, you know, in take those kinds of things, when someone is high and they're acting like they're not really acting anything. They're just fucking high.
But see, for me, yeah. I force it. I mean, I'll come in.
Yeah, it shows too. I'm sure.
I'll be on my second cup of coffee before 9 o'clock. You know, and I'm just like, you know, but yeah, it's really like those shroom highs are the ones that are, I try to maintain. I find myself just, because they last a long time for me for some reason. But yeah, definitely don't take it on an empty stomach. Have like, you know, get a sandwich or something before you start, you know.
Sprinkle those mushrooms on your pizza, man, and just call it good.
All I gotta say is, if you're gonna take edibles, give yourself a fighting chance.
Yeah. I have not done that since then. I you know, I've actually been tempted to get the cookies again and only eat literally only half that day, and then just wait till the next day to have the rest.
Have one of the little truffles. Don't even get it. Todd, don't get a cookie. Get one of those little truffles. They're a little tiny piece of chocolate, and it kind of melts in your mouth, and it tastes delicious. And it hit me like, literally, it hit me like that. So here's my sister-in-law who's very very straight-laced Mormon, and she's like, oh, I ate two of them. My older sister, she's like, I'll take two of them. And they look at me, and I said, one. I already know me. My sister, she's like, it didn't do shit for me. Because she has a real high tolerance. I mean, she could do a lot. Me, I took one, and I'm like, I'm already drooling on myself. And it was like, it literally was like 5 milligrams. And I'm like, I don't think I could handle anything more than this, because I'd be, it did, I was, I'm not gonna lie, I was kind of like, this is funny. And Romeo looking at me bubble. Like, you're high as hell. He's like, oh, hell, you are high as hell. I'm like, yes, I don't have to drive. So,
Marianne.
So he actually got on stage last night too.
And oh, awesome.
So it was kind of crazy for him, because again, it's been a year since we've been on stage. And so, I think last night was his 7th time on stage or something. And it was rough. It was kind of rough, but I was already really pissed off. So the show was out in Bremerton, which is about an hour away from where we live. And we decided, since we have a gazillion people living in the house now, that I was like, let's just go get a hotel room and we'll stay the night and we'll just do it upright. We got a hotel that right across from the venue, and we got there, and I'd already paid for the hotel with my credit card. I paid for everything online, or actually I talked to somebody online, and I sat through their little fucking spiel, and they have a timeshare. It was and I'm going to call this out. It was a Quality Suites and Inn in Bremerton, off Kitsap Way. And I went in, and they took a look they looked at me and then they looked at Romeo and they said, that's going to be a $100 deposit. And I said, okay. To put it, and they said, no, cash. I said, no, I'm like, no, I'm not going to give you a $100 cash deposit. And they, I said, you can take it off my card. No, we want a hundred. You need to give us a $100 cash deposit. And I said, first of all, that's janky as hell. I said, that's suspect as hell. I said, I've already paid for this room. Not only did I pay for this room, I paid for 3 nights and 4 days at another hotel through your guys' company. And I've already paid for all that shit with my card. I said, if you want to charge me $100 on my credit card, that's one thing. I said, because that's suspect as fuck. I said, because I'm going to walk in there. I'm telling you right now, I'm going to take my phone and I'm going to take pictures of everything. And I'm going to look at everything. Because once I give you a $100 cash deposit, I have no recourse. I have no way of fighting and disputing if you guys are trying to say that we did something. We are in our 50s for housing. We are grandparents. We are homeowners. What the fuck is wrong? I was so mad. And I was like, you know, this to me is I was so mad. I was like, this is racist as fuck. I really wanted to sit there and everybody else the next day. So, Juwan, in case you didn't know, Romeo is non-pigmentally challenged. So he's kind of like, he's the yin and my yang. And so I was so mad. I was like, I want to stand out here and ask every person as they leave, hey, did you guys have to pay the $100 deposit too? Okay. Was yours also, did you have to pay in cash? Or was it just us? Was it just us? Was it just us? You know, I was really mad. I was really upset about it. I'm still not done. I'm going to drag their name through the mud. But they were, and now does it sound racist when I say that they were Indians that were requesting. Oh.
I make them knew that.
That's a twist.
I said I automatically. Well, I just pictured a Indian man stating that when you was telling the story. I don't know why.
Oh wow.
Well, probably because I mean, because that's how they be to me. So that's the reason.
Yeah, and that's it's so funny because before we drove out to Bremerton. And before we drove out there, the night before, we stopped at Safeway. And again, I told you, Romeo, he's my little sugar addict. And he bought some donuts. Little. And okay, that's fair. So he bought some donuts, right? And when he bit into them, he was mad because they weren't even a day old. They were like 10 days old. It was gross. They were disgusting. And so yesterday morning, I said, look, this is, it's the principle. I mean, we spent the money. You wanted to have the product. We're getting the product. And I went into customer service and I stood in line and I told him, I said, just go get you your replacement donuts and bring them back and I'll deal with this. And without a receipt, I look at the lady in the customer service and I said, look, we bought these donuts last night. They're disgusting. They were so stale that we couldn't eat them. So we're going to go get the replacement donuts. And then we'll just, you can get rid of these ones and we'll just take the replacement donuts. And I told Romeo, I said, that's white privilege. For people who get so mad at hearing white privilege, this is the white privilege part. And I'm hoping that maybe someday, Todd, we got to figure out a way to explain to other fucking white people what white privilege is so that they don't get pissed off. Look, white privilege is me walking in there without a receipt and telling this woman that she's going to replace my donuts and knowing that she's not going to argue with me, that she's going to replace my donuts. And I'm not asking, I'm telling you, I'm getting replacement donuts right now and I'm going to exchange these nasty ones for fresh ones. Okay. Okay. And I'm walking out knowing that she's not going to say, well, where's your receipt? And if I say, well, I don't have a receipt, that she's still not going to argue with me because I know that I can prove that I paid for them. Look, here's the, I bought them on my card. Here's, oh my gosh, and knowing that I'm not going to have to show her. That's white privilege. Knowing that if my fiance went in there, he would have had to say, I bought these, excuse me, ma'am, I bought these last night and they were stale. I don't have my receipt. I can't still exchange them. I threw the receipt away. and knowing that he would have had to prove that he bought it. That's the difference. And that's something that people, when you say, and as I left and I got in the, we got in the truck with his fresh donuts, and I said, that's white privilege. And that's something that we need to acknowledge within ourselves, that that's the difference. And if you don't, that's, and that's why I say a lot of y'all don't have Black friends, and it shows, because they wouldn't know the other side of that. They wouldn't know that they've gone into the store and their Black friends are the ones who are saying, hey, I bought these, I don't have the receipt, can I exchange them? I'm not asking for money back, my money back. I'm just asking if I can exchange them for a different product. I can prove that I bought them, because I have here, I can show you on my phone, you know, I pulled up my bank account, and here's my bank account, and here's where I paid for it. So anyways, so that was my day yesterday, you know, and it was definitely like having that white privilege and then being told that I had to give a cash. I'm still like reeling with the fact. So we ended up, the guy, so anyways, I told the guy, I started arguing with him, and I said, I'm not going to give you a cash deposit. You can take it off my credit card. And then, because he started weirding me out so much, I took pictures of the contract that he had me signing on this document. He got so mad at me when I told him that I was going to take pictures of the room to prove what it looked like when we got there, that he goes, I refuse. You get out. I'm not going to rent you. Get out. And I said, okay. And he went to take the paperwork and put it away. I said, I want my paperwork back. I put my name on there. I want my paperwork back. And so he started shredding in front of me. I said, okay, deuces. And we went across the street and got another hotel for about $100 cheaper. And it was a really nice hotel. But, and they delivered breakfast to us the next morning in our room. So, yeah, it was a much better deal. But it was
You weren't meant to be over there.
Hmm?
I said you wasn't meant to be at that first hotel.
Yeah, it's not something. And I can say that there's times that I will deal with shit like that because I'm a woman, right? Mm-hmm. And now, the only thing is, so I sit here and I get a little bit mad, but then I'm thinking maybe it's my smart ass that got us in that position. I don't know if when I originally, because I called a national number to schedule, book the hotel. And these people, they actually asked me, what is the purpose of your guys' stay? And I'm thinking, that's a weird question to ask me. I'm spending the night in a hotel. What do you care? And so to my smart ass, because I am a comedian, I couldn't fucking
wait for it.
it's
probably something I'm thinking too.
I said, my lover and I need a hotel to hide from his wife and my husband.
Oh God. Oh God. Oh wow. Okay. Okay. That was the second thing I was thinking about. I would have been like, look, I just need 2 hours and he's paying me double, so that's all. Okay. Like, you know. Mm. Oh, and bring extra sheets. Let me stop. let me stop. I don't want to let's just say it's gonna be a waterfall.
I need a roll of Bisqueen and lots of towels.
No, but you know what? I expect that from a place like Bremerton. You know,
Bremertown, yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, racism in Bremerton? Oh, Jesus Christ, don't ever change.
Actually, though, what's really unusual is that's one of the reasons why Romeo had lived there for so long, for 30 years, is because there's no racism. And I can honestly say that somebody who has been, I've gone outside a time or two with people who are non-pigmentally challenged, and maybe gone to a bar or something. And I've experienced a lot of, like, if nothing else, and this is where I say, look, if you don't think racism exists in 2020, go on a date with somebody of the that's not the same color as you. Go out with somebody who's a lot more pigmented than you are and find out just exactly, you will know how much there is out there. And so the one place that I've never experienced that was in Bremerton. Like, nobody's ever given a side. And you're used to that. When you walk through a store, people give you side eye. They look at you funny. Or when you're sitting at a restaurant, having the waitress, the manager come over and tell you, I'm sorry, we're getting another waitress to come sit at your table to serve you because your waitress is really super busy when there's only 8 people in the whole fucking restaurant. You know, I mean, that's, you know, like,
what it means. No,
it's gonna be like, excuse me, mademoiselle, we're gonna send you a black waitress so she can easily communicate with your counterpart.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know what? It's funny because it's like, I mean, interracial dating, like, and I think you're right. I think if you're dating somebody outside of your race, but also, it also depends on like where you live. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like here in New York, I mean, there's so many people here. A lot of people are interracially dating. You know what I'm saying? Like everybody, and it's not, and the thing is like, I look and I just think like, oh, like an Asian person, like an Asian guy and a black woman. Oh, that's cute. They're gonna make cute babies one day or whatever. Like, I think it's amazing. Like, I like that people are actually going outside, you know, outside of their norm. But you take that kind of, you know, you take that kind of, like, that kind of dating, that kind of institutional dating, and you move it somewhere where, you know, and dare I say, like the South, you know, like, it's almost like you go to a restaurant in a place where it's like, you know, it's the people look places that were racism and segregation, they still live in like, you know, the 1800s. Yeah, you will get looked at funny. Your service will determine on who you bring to a restaurant. Or, you know, there've been times where I've been to a Denny's with an Asian girl and we have not been served. And this was in Spanaway, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say that was here because I remember you telling me about
it. And it seems like every Denny's that I've ever went to I've never been to a Denny's with somebody who was of my race. It's always been an opposite race. So we go to a Denny's and we waited for a half an hour before anyone even looked at us. And again, it wasn't that busy. We could have sat at the bar, but it was just like we were treated very differently as like, and I looked at how all the other people were being treated. They're, oh, hey, mm-hmm. How you doing? Just getting out of church. Oh, welcome back, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I live right down the, Denny's right by you. I live right down the block from there. You know, I'm taking, you know, a girl there. And I'm kind of concerned. I'm like, you know, we could go somewhere else. She's like, no, we're already here. And I'm in the mood for pancakes. I'm like, okay. And we waited and waited and waited. And she was so disappointed in the service. I didn't even have to say anything. She was mad for me because I know how mad I can get for shitty service. So we were in that Denny's for like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, we were eating and we were drinking. And she was like, you know what? I don't know about you, but I will never, ever, ever go to a Denny's again. Because that's the second time in a row she's been at a Denny's. And she felt uncomfortable being there. You know, and that's the third time I've ever been to a Denny's where I'm just like, you know what? Are you serious? We're still doing this? You know, we're still ignoring people and we're still, you know, like my money is good. Last time I checked, you know, my money is green. My money's not counterfeit. If I give it to you, mm-hmm. you're going to accept it, you know? So it really bugs me that, you know, that stuff like that still happens because of whoever you bring to, you know, like I've never been to a black restaurant with a white girl and, you know, they've been like, oh, she can't come in. Like that's never happened.
I've had shitty service at a black restaurant where it was just like, I was one of like three white people. And honestly, to me, I equated it the same way that I did the one time when I had the worst fucking tequila sunrise of my entire life, the most disgusting tequila sunrise was at a gay bar. And, you know, it is a kind of, it's like there's the message. Yep. I get it. I'm somewhere that I'm not supposed to fit in, that I don't belong. And you know what? I'm not mad about that. I'm not going to get mad about that because I understand I sympathize with a lot of the struggle and the things that these different demographics have to deal with. Right. That I don't have to deal with those things. For the most part. So I'm not mad about that. But I also understand that that's the same kind of shitty treatment that they get a lot of times when they're dealing with people that look like me. Well, and that,
first
that
of
needs
all,
to fucking change.
Well, first of all, a shitty margarita, is that what you had?
Tequila sunrise.
I'm sorry. That's not even supposed to happen, especially at a gay bar.
Oh, no. It was disgusting.
That's not even so.
In fact, my brother was with me. We ended up it's a Portland thing. We ended up in Portland. It's trust me, we ended up in the gay bar for a really bizarre reason. And so my brother, of course, we were in the gay bar because I was actually taking them to a strip club. I was trying to take them to a strip club. And there was down the road Mary's, which is awesome, by the way. And I had to go to the bathroom and they wouldn't let me, you know, they're like, there's a bar right here. And I'm like, no, Mary's is just a couple blocks down the, and they're like, no, we just go in right here. And we ended up in there. And it wasn't until I walked in, I opened the bathroom door and this woman's hovering over the toilet. And like, she like did the deer in the headlight look at me. And I was like, oh shit, the door's not locked. And she goes, it doesn't lock. And I'm like, what the fuck? We're in a bar and the women's bathroom door doesn't lock. Are you kidding me? And she's like, it's fine. Trust me. And that's when I stopped and looked around and realized that what I thought was a woman was actually there was all these dudes kissing. And I'm like, oh, okay. Now, mind you, at the time I was with my psychotic boyfriend, my psycho ex.
Oh, shit. You were with him and your brother?
Yes, and one of my brother, not my brother Joe, my brother Brad. And so I go use the toilet and I come out. And here's my brother Brad bellied up to the bar. He's got like three drinks.
Brad, okay.
He's got three drinks because apparently people were buying him drinks. I asked for a drink. And it was the most disgusting. And Brad's drinking tequila sunrises. And I'm like, I take a sip. I'm like, this is fucking gross. I said, is yours gross? And he goes, no, this is one of the best tequila sunrises I've ever had.
Oh, Lord.
And at this point, I was like, okay, we need to go. And the ex was like, no, we're fine. You know, we're just gonna stay. So they also had some machines to go gamble, and I was sitting there gambling. And he goes, "We got to go. There's guys hitting on me. We got to go." And I'm like, "No, we're staying. I'm winning." You know, but it was. I agree. It is the place where you would think that you would have a really good drink, but the bartender was just glaring daggers at me the whole time. I don't know. Maybe his boyfriend cheated on him with a woman. I don't know.
That's a good excuse. That'd be a good reason.
I just can't get over the thought of like your brother and your ex in a gay bar. That to me is absolutely hilarious. Knowing
actually,
those
what's
two.
Really hilarious was really hilarious was that afterwards, when we did finally make it to Mary's, my brother Brad, who was broke as a joke, had not two nickels to rub together, wanted to sit center stage front. And he's sitting there. And of course, at the time, boyfriend was sitting way in the back because he was freaking out. I'm like, I don't know why I'm paying for shit. The stripper on stage, she did this thing where she kicked her foot down. Well, she accidentally knocked over my brother's beer into my lap. And she picked up my leg and sucked the beer out of my pants. And my brother about jizzed himself. Oh, he's wow. Like, oh my God, she's so close. I can smell her twat. And I was like... It was a very bizarre situation, you know. Life was
weird. That happened.
I know it sounds crazy, but I'm straight. I'm telling you, I am straight, and yet I can't tell you how many strip clubs I've been to. Like I've been to a lot of female strip clubs. I'm like, all right, you do you, girl. Get some money.
That is too funny. I think it's probably funnier for me because I know those two guys.
Yeah. Straight lace, military nut job, and on the surface, but yeah.
With a smidge of homophobia mixed in there,
which
too.
Is funny because actually he was late. He was closet gay or something. You know, at least. Bisexual, but that, you know, things you find out after dating a person for a while.
Wow. So, okay. That makes sense, actually.
That outrage by somebody being gay, that I'm outraged. Trump supporter.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm feeling like I'm getting some unwanted, unnecessary therapy here, guys. So we'll move on now.
Oh, yeah.
So, hey, John.
Dude, this is what this is for. Therapy. Talk about it.
Dude, can we talk about the Trump idol?
Oh my God, we need to talk. Have you seen Juwan? Have you seen the gold Trump idol that seems to be floating around the internet?
It's in the chat room if you click one of those links.
Actually, I will bring it up, Jamal. I've learned to do this.
I don't know the whole story myself. I do know that I have seen this
thing
float around.
I've
seen pictures of this.
You had to have seen this.
Oh wow!
It's more than
so. What's the backstory on this?
So, okay, go ahead, Mr. Cousin. I'm Cousin Todd.
Cousin Todd.
Me? I just found the link. I just found the link because of the photo. I don't know the story.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, I'll do this. So this is like the thing that I looked at, like, this particular picture right here, and I'm thinking that this woman is, like, you know, 5'2 or 5'5. She's not. Apparently, this statue here of Donald Trump that was at the Conservative Political Action Conference that's, I think, happening in Orlando, Florida, this is 6 feet tall, or it's more than 6 feet tall. And it's so it's 6 feet tall. It was supposedly made by an artist from Mexico, which is kind of ironic. And I mean, first of all, like I said earlier, this thing looks like if this is what it looks like if you were to like pee in a mold that looked like that, that's what urine would look like in the form of, you know, of the statue. But yeah, first of all, look at it. He's in flip flops. It looks like he's wearing like boxer shorts. I mean, I don't know what to make of this, to be honest with you. But it's an idol. It's a Republican idol. But yeah, it's funny because according to this, they had give me a second here.
It reminds me of the movies The Golden Calf from Jane and Silent Bob Strike Back, or Dogma, rather.
Oh my, that. Like, and people are just like taking pictures of it, worshiping it, bowing down to it. I mean, it's
because he gets sandaled feet.
Yeah, like that. That's the thing that's funny to me is like he's wearing sandals. Like.
Sandals and Apollo Creed's boxing shorts.
Exactly. The more than 6 foot statue turned heads as it was wheeled into the Hyatt Regency Thursday evening, while CPAC attendees picked up their registrations and milled around the hotel. The statue was on its way to the conference exhibit hall, where it found a home in a booth for a conservative nonprofit called Look Ahead America.
Wow.
Also, let's see. I have no control.
I love the targeted ads that you get, Jamal. That's all I gotta say right now.
Okay, I did not know what you were laughing at until I just looked out.
That's fucking awesome.
Okay,
that is the best Gwen. That's the best Spider Gwen costume I've ever seen.
Okay, I gotta erase my cookies. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know where that came from. I really don't. And here I am trying to defend myself. Like, no, it's
not. Fuck Spider it. Woman, addictive game.
Oh my god, that's fucking hilarious.
I'm going to save this and see what the hoopla is all about.
to look at this game later.
All right. Yeah, thanks for interrupting our this very important segment.
That's so fucking great. Oh wow.
So, no. Tommy Zeegan, the Florida-based artist, created the Trump statue in response to the multiple pieces of art mocking Trump. the Zegan said that the piece on display is actually fiberglass mold of a real stainless steel sculpture currently stored in the warehouse in Tampa, where it awaits a potential high-profile showcase. What do you guys think that this statue is worth, actually? Like, what would you pay for to have the statue in your living room?
Well, I wouldn't pay $2 for that, but, you know, as far as, like... It looks like an award you would get if you were, like... You know what? That could easily go as the actual physical representation of a Darwin Award.
Mm. Oh, that is great. You know what? I love that. That's a great kind of thought process that it would be a Darwin Award. I love that.
Like, here's your Darwin Award?
For... Yeah. Well, not yours, because...
Well, yeah.
Darwin Award. I mean, here's to the widow. They're going to award it to the widow of the Darwin Award, or the parents of the person with the Darwin Award, or, you know.
Yeah, it looks like it could be like, you know, instead of like the Academy Award statue, this could be like a statue for people who
Razzies?
A Razzie Award.
Well, Razzie's an actual raspberry, I think, but I was thinking more like along the lines of someone who's in the Special Olympics.
You can say that, Todd. We can't. We can't. That's their thing. So you can say that we can't say the same thing. Jamal, they're saying Jamal can say that we can't. Right. There's things that I can say that you guys can't.
For people at home who are going, why can't he say it? It's like, because I have one of these.
Yes. Yes.
People who are watching the video can see that I'm holding up a gold medal from the Special Olympics from the 90s.
Yes, he's a medal. He's like, that's more than probably that's more than I've ever won.
So. I you know what's funny is I was telling someone just the other day is I forgot about this even. I lettered in high school doing Special Olympic swim team. Mm-hmm. I had a letterman's jacket and everything.
I didn't know that was even a thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you live in a very progressive area, things like that happen.
And progressive and affluent white neighborhood. I mean, yes. Issaquah was a very...
There was literally like two African-American students in the whole school.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. And Issaquah was very, very affluent, very rich.
All, the kids who drove to school, one of the kids that drove in my class had a BMW. Another kid had spent thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars turning his cheap piece of shit truck into a lowrider that basically was like this far off the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of rich people in my school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of rich parents, because that's where a lot of the Microsoft money was coming from too, when Microsoft first started.
Well, yeah.
Issaquah was in that place, you know. It was, you know, it's not quite Mercer Island, but it's not far from it.
Well, today it's probably equal to Mercer Island, but back then in the 80s, Microsoft still their only campus they had was in Redmond, which was on the north end of the lake that was at the that our my town Issaquah is on the south end of Lake Sammamish, and then Redmond's on the north end of that lake. So I was literally like 10 minutes away from like Microsoft and Nintendo growing up.
Yeah. All that rich money. That as poor white folk, we just look up there and we're like, damn, I wish we had that kind of money.
I calling the game counselors was a local call for me, so I called them like almost every weekend.
Yeah, and hence the geek part of the 206 geek.
Oh wow! Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. You have a don't you have a podcast, Juwan?
Well, I had the No Capping podcast. And before that, we was on the radio. We had the Morning Grind with Goof Camp on Power 104. Nice. Yeah, but yeah, I'm coming out with another like nightly show, The Nightcap. And
oh, is there anything that you could tell us about it?
Yeah, Yeah.
It's a show about nothing.
Oh. Nice, like us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like us.
Yeah.
But is it a podcast or what's the medium?
Yeah, it's going to turn into like a visual podcast. But I probably got like 3 episodes up, like from last year and the year before last, because I already stated that, you know, it's a show about nothing. So I'm going to drop it whenever, you know, so don't look for it. Yeah. So, but yeah, I got a lot of projects coming out this year. 2021 is really going to be my 2020. 2020 really set my ass down somewhere where I just had to really get right within. So, yeah. 2021, these bill collectors are calling me again. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, though, is I think that 2020 in a lot of ways was there was a lot of bad things too, but if you wanted to take a look at a lot of the good things, it did set everybody back. It did set everybody down and said, okay, you have no choice but to face a lot of your shit that you've been able to avoid. Right. Yes.
Yeah.
And so that was, you know, and if you did it right, you listened to that and you said, yes, now I'm going to sit down and I'm going to figure things out. And I don't have an excuse because I don't have all these distractions. I removed all the distractions and it's time for me to listen and figure out what do I need to do to grow? What do I need to do to better myself?
Yeah, I did that actually last year. I had quit comedy for 7 months. I had no desire to get back on stage because it was like my first time in my life that comedy wasn't there. So, I just didn't know what to do. I felt like she abandoned me. So I left her for like 7 months and then opened up for Rodney Perry at the Comedy Zone. And I just fell back in love like with the stage again. But during that 7 months time, I just like really just tapped in and really got myself right, got myself in alignment where I needed to be.
And, you know, I think that every comic has that story about when they walked away for a while. For me, I did a couple of times, most notably like when my mom died. I stopped doing comedy for about 4 years. And it wasn't because I couldn't handle doing the comedy, because I was at that point where I was actually started to do really good, where I was getting those paid bookings and I was really had that progress. And then everything for me, when I hit the stage and I had that great show, and then I left and went to go get my card and went to go call my mom was my biggest fan. So if it was a great show, I'd call and tell her how awesome it was. If it was a bad show, I'd call for her condolences. And so, you know, like, and she did, because I always knew if I had a really good joke, if she laughed, it was good. If she went, ooh, and you know, I was like, and a lot of my peers were like, I cannot believe you have your mom come to your show. I mean, the shit that you talk about that comes out of your mouth. And I'm like, why wouldn't I? She knows all this stuff. You know, we were really close. And so it was that total meltdown after I would leave the show and I was driving home and I would have to pull off the side of the road and I just have that meltdown. And I was like, I need to heal within me first. I need to, and everybody's like, that's the time you should be getting on stage. You should be pushing through the pain. And I'm like, you don't get it.
It's just a period of time where ain't shit funny. And that's how it was for me. Wasn't shit funny. And I couldn't force it or anything.
It wasn't authentic.
Yeah,
you couldn't be authentic. Right. And I could still get people to laugh. I could still get on stage and get people to laugh. But for me, it was so destructive for me because it just tore me apart every single time. And I was like, I can't do this. I have to walk away for a while and I have to rebuild me and I have to be right with me, because the reality is that the hardest thing as a comic is to find your voice, to find who you are, to be the story that you want to tell on stage. And so the more that, you know, I think that that's my goal, is to really rip off that bandaid and dig a little bit more into the things that I'm afraid to talk about. you know, to be able to share that. Or then I don't, because I don't think people are going to think it's funny, because, you know, I'll tell my story to my friends and they're like, why is this not on stage? Why are you telling the jokes you're telling instead of this stuff? Because this shit is hilarious. And I'm like, because I don't think people are going to relate.
I did a few shows during the pandemic and I kept telling myself, no pandemic jokes, no pandemic jokes, no pandemic jokes. 2 minutes into my set, pandemic jokes. And the thing is, and don't get me wrong, for the most part, a lot of people were struggling during the height of the pandemic. I found myself telling one pandemic joke after the other, and the audience that was in attendance was actually laughing, because this wasn't, this is just me suffering through the pandemic. It was everybody suffering through the pandemic. And I know that for the most part, you know, because we hear about it every day. You turn on the news, it's about vaccine, it's about death numbers, it's about this. And it's every day, every morning, every day you hear about it. I don't think a day has ever went by unless I was sleeping the entire day where I didn't hear about the pandemic. But and on top of that, if you go to a comedy show, I was thinking to myself, that's probably the last thing they want to talk about or hear about, because they hear it all the time. But nonetheless, they see a stand-up comic on stage with their own point of view of the pandemic, making fun of the pandemic, and people are laughing. They're just like, because first of all, they've been inside for a long period of time. So their sense of entertainment is them being online, binge watching TV shows or whatever, which was what I was doing too. But to actually go outside and for me to do a comedy show in a park where, you know, everyone is social distancing and being safe, I think it gave people like a little bit of hope, like, hey, I'm outside. Sure, it's cold, but I'm not in the house, you know, wallowing, or I'm just out here doing things, you know, even though it's limited. So, but at the same time, I think and I know a lot of comics weren't able to do shows or whatever, but I'm like, even if you plan for like the next year, like we kept asking ourselves, when is comedy coming back? Is it going to be 2021 or 2022? But at the same time, if you at least laid out, okay, well, here's the thing. As soon as this opens, I'm going to have this ready. I'm going to have this ready. I'm going to reevaluate myself as a comedian, because the thing is, I don't want to be the same comedian going into the pandemic going out. I want to be, even as a person, I want to become, you know, I want there to be a complete change. I want there to be some kind of like, there was a sense of an epiphany. There was a sense of self-realization. I want to make sure that, you know, I'm a better comic coming out of this thing, because I would hate to see a comic come out of this pandemic and just suck for the rest of his existence as a comedian. Like you didn't use your time wisely while you were indoors or whatever. If that's the case.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to necessarily say that, because I can honestly say that I didn't really write any jokes, but the difference is that I was working a more frontline job. Right. So this pandemic had to take a precedence for me, because the work that I was doing, my day job, absolutely, I was taking the responsibility for a lot of other human lives and trying to make sure that everything that I was doing for these other humans was keeping them safe, so that they kept their families and everything else safe. So, but for me, I was scared. I was scared to get on stage last night. I wasn't as excited as I thought I was going to be. And yet when I did get on stage, because I literally did not know up until probably when I got to the venue what I was even going to talk about.
Yeah.
And mind you, it was only 6 minutes. So it wasn't rough, but like I took that time to, when I got up there, for me, I was more of thought of it, more of a win, how I felt being on stage compared to what I had experienced in the past when I'd taken a time away from stage. I didn't feel like when I took the stage, I didn't feel like I was as rusty as I thought I was going to be. I was actually a lot more like I just like zoned in and felt like I was in that pocket better than I would have expected. And I also, it's weird that all the comics that got up there, not one of them addressed that it had been a year since they'd been on stage. None of them addressed the fact of the pandemic. Nobody even talked about it. To me, I thought that was really weird. I thought that it was weird that nobody at least made that comment. Like for me, the first thing I did when I got up there is I was very, like, I'm high energy anyway. So I was like, you know, oh my God, thank you. Welcome back. I've missed you. I can't believe it's been a year. I'm so happy to be here to see all of you people, except for you. I'm like, but I, that's because I don't know you. I said, you might be a lovely person. I just don't know you, you know, but everybody else, because it was all of us, we were all comics. Most of the people that were in the venue were comics, but it was weird to me that people hadn't talked about it. And it was almost like, let's ignore it and just push through a case behind us and let's forget about it happened. The whole world, we should be talking about this. The entire world, how often will this ever happen in anybody's lifetime? That the entire world is going through a shared experience at the same time. Something that is so outside the norm that it's only happened one other time over 100 years ago. When in the 1918.
Right.
This is something we should be talking about. We should be talking about how this we made it through our struggles and we're still going through it. I mean, it's created not just the pandemic, that virus that could kill people, but now we have this huge mental health crisis that, believe it or not, okay, the doctors did their jobs. Okay, step aside. Now it's time for the comics. We need to do our job. We'll take it from here. You guys saved the lives. Now we're going to save the minds. We're going to be making people laugh. Yeah. We're going to let them take that time to be able to rejoice. Rejoice in being able to be out in public again and laugh about things that we took that nightmare that we all went through as an entire human race. And now let's flip the script on it and find the funny parts in there that we can share together and make everybody take that deep sigh. Like, we made it through that nightmare. Yeah, we're not completely out of the woods, but for the most part, man, most of, we all fucking made it through something. Let's talk about that.
Right.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you're right about that. We should, you know, I mean, again, embrace the comeback. We are going to be coming back. And like I said, I can't wait to see a lot of these comics get back on stage. And, you know, I can't wait to see this guy, our guest. By the way, before you head on out, I just want to, let's see, you say you have a goof, what was Goof Camp?
Yeah, Goof Camp.
Are you like the president or like the producer?
CEO, founder, Goof Camp.
Okay, you know, founder of Goof Camp. You got Caps Cookies, which please save me like a tower. I got you. Save me tower of these cookies, yo. I'm not even joking.
I got.
Again, he's gonna be performing with me at Cornelius, North Carolina, at Studio 13 on Saturday, May 1st. So be there. Tickets are available and whatnot. Mr. Cap, it was a pleasure to meet you. I'm definitely looking forward to working with you, man.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I appreciate the show. Y'all can definitely catch me on the Freedom Papers tour, a new tour. One of my sponsors is my daughter's company, Little Lady Sweet Shop, where cotton candy is dandy.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, so she's the first sponsor of the tour. Get the cap cookies, and then I have another product called No Caps, which are bottle openers. I wonder if I got one on me. They're bottle openers, but it's also a USB. So you get the really no cap in. Really get to know what I'm so I definitely will have those on sale May 1st in Cornelius, Studio 13.
Right on, man. No, definitely.
Love it. Love it. Get that merch out there.
Hell yeah, man.
Promote.
All right. Well,
all right.
Thanks a lot, Mr. It was a pleasure. Cap.
Thank you so much for coming on. Yes. We appreciate you.
Yeah, no problem. No problem.
Especially last minute. That's thank you very much for filling in.
Oh, yeah. No problem. I apologize about the technical differences.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
Beforehand. But, I'm on here. So, shit. But like, all right, I'm out.
Thank you. We're almost out ourselves.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, no, this was, he was, I'm really looking forward to meeting this dude. You know, like, it's him, another guy who's on the show, and then I found a host And it was just, again, it was just watching videos. And every time someone would send me a video, I'd be like, oh man, okay, I gotta, okay, let me watch it. And then I would have like my two people in mind, and this person would be good. I'm like, okay, how do I decide? So I was just like, let's flip a coin. No, let's not do that. Let's evaluate, you know. So it was tough, but I think it's gonna be good. I think it's gonna be really good.
Talk to me about what happened. I don't know if you've already talked about it, but man, you all of a sudden, I see a post from you, and you've got what, 13 shows? How many shows is it you got?
25
shows. Oh my god, I remember I counted, and it was like.
Here's the thing: when you look at the Facebook post, it looks like it's 13, but when you actually click on it, there's more.
Then it's like 20. Yeah, then that's what happened. I was like, it kept going. So, how did you put all of that together? Like, and when?
So here's the thing: during the pandemic, before the pandemic, I had already planned a tour, and it was 11 cities at first, and you know, everything was set, ready to go. And then of course, you know, February, March, April, it happened. So one by one, the club, the venues had sent me emails, you know, stating that they weren't able to, do the show because of, you know, bans on gatherings and all that, and stay at home ordinances and whatnot. So slowly but surely, the tour had to be canceled. So with that being said, I was still in contact with a lot of these venues still. You know, they were updating me on what was going on. And, you know, I was surprised they were still even talking to me, because they're like, hey, we would love for you to bring your comedy show here. What I did was in the past, like 4 months, I had called up these venues, recalled up the venues, and then called up other venues, and started setting up. You know, I was like, look, since we look like we're sort of coming out of the woods with the vaccine and everything, and some of these gathering bans kind of lifted at a certain capacity, some of these places were able to open and conduct business as far as, okay, we want to do a show here or whatever. So what I did was I found 25 cities or venues, for that matter, that wanted to do a comedy show, and basically just kind of set up one by one, just kind of set up a tour, because this is something that I've always wanted to do. You know, I've been doing this for 10 years. I've never been on a tour, and it's kind of like one of the things I'd like to check off my list. I know this tour is going to be very exhausting because of the way that I have it set up. But I might develop a cocaine habit before long, to be honest with you.
Dude.
Thanks. I'm glad you guys are concerned about my health. But no, it's something that I felt like I had to do. I mean, I am independently doing this, this tour. There's zero sponsors. This is all me, you know? So that's the one thing that I'm kind of proud of, because it's, you know, I this is something I've always wanted to do. So, you know, I've kind of made sure that I put myself in a position to be able to execute this tour. And I can't wait till we start. But like I said before, it's between now and May, I got to make sure that, you know, I'm getting on stage and trying to knock whatever rust that I have off.
Yeah.
So, you know, I could be able to go on the road and perform, you know, going on a plane, getting off a plane, whatever hotel room that I'm at, and then going straight to the venue to be able to just, you know, to perform. And you know, the Studio 13 over in El Cornelius, you know, I talked with them. That was going to be my very first stop, because I kind of felt like I wanted to do something closer to New York. And it's like a 2-hour flight. So it made sense to me to kind of, you know, do it. But yeah, everybody that I've talked to as far as the venues, they're really looking forward to it, and they're helping out in every way they can, because A, they want this to be successful, and A, they want people to come back and start doing things as far as nightlife goes. So I'm really happy to be a part of helping facilitate that.
You know, it's funny, the bar that I was at last night, one of the lady who puts it on, she's kind of new to comedy. She'd only just started doing comedy before the world shut down. And so she was hosting it and insanely nervous about the show and how it was going to go and her duties as a host. And she said that up until last night, the bar, it reopened, but it's been completely dead inside. And that's just, that's pretty accurate for what's been going on. I mean, you know, a lot of our smaller locations, all of our places where entertainment has been held has definitely been crippled by the pandemic. And so for us to be able to try, like, everybody kept going, well, how is it going to survive? How's comedy? And I don't know about what you guys are using over in New York, but we here, I guess, here's something I never thought I would have ever experienced, as we have what's called a condom for the microphone. So they put it's a black rubber piece that goes over the microphone, and it's a condom. So that, and then, you know, but they take it off when they're done, and the next comic goes and puts the condom on and hand sanitizers when they leave or before they get up there, and then puts, you know, and then not. So it, you know, it's, there's a lot of innovative, you know, like they say, necessity is the mother of invention.
So I they mean, have a it's literally a condom, or is it something designed specifically for microphones?
Specifically designed for microphones.
But you call it a condom.
They call it a black condom. Yeah, it's a condom. They call it, it's like a rubber piece that goes over the top of the microphone, but it just covers the head of the microphone, not the whole shaft of the microphone.
Oh, I never, the shaft of the microphone. Okay, that's a new phrase for me. Yeah, hold the microphone by the shaft.
Would you describe that? I mean, it's the head of the microphone and the shaft.
Oh, okay.
Right, so it's just this black piece that goes over the head of the microphone.
I feel like I'm at a sexual education program, you know.
And I am the one who would be teaching it too, right?
Because I call it the stem sometimes. But, the stem of the microphone. You know, I keep it technical. I could see why they would do something like that. I guess I kind of think that it kind of takes away from the show, like the hosts have to change out every time and do all of that. But I mean, the places that I've venues that I've been in contact with, they some of them are occupying at a certain capacity. So like for a 500 seater, you know, they would be like, well, you know, we, some of them were just like, well, would you do a show for like 100 people in a 500 seater room? And I'm like, why not? You know what I'm saying? If you're going to open and can you make it look like it's going to be 100 people instead of just having all that space, you know, where it looked like people just didn't show up? I mean, can we disguise the room or whatever? But as far, my main concern of the tour is in fact, safety. You know, a lot of the venues, they're like, they do it like a cleanup before and after the show, hand sanitizers. As far as masks go, I'm going to be pretty much far away from the audiences for the most part, some of the venues that I looked at. But I mean, I'm going to have my mask when I'm at my merch booth. So I'm going to make sure that I'm at least protected. And I would like to hope that the people that come to the shows are also doing the same. But a lot of the venues are operating at a certain capacity. I know New York, we are, like restaurants now are opened at 30% capacity. You know, so there are indoor dining, that is. So there's indoor dining at a 30% capacity. And we'll see how that goes. I know that people that have taken the vaccine out in Long Island, there's some people that have to retake the vaccine because the vaccine wasn't stored at a certain temperature. So they got to have to start all over, which is like a big thing. But you know, we're trying to do what we can. And like I said, like I'm keeping my thoughts are positive as far as the light at the end of the tunnel, because I do have every intention of, you know, doing this tour. If for some reason, I mean, I'm prepared for a venue to cancel because, you know, like, oops, our, you know, coronavirus rate has spiked up a little bit, we got to cancel the show. Like I'm prepared for something like that, but for the most part, I am going through this no matter what.
Yeah, well, check into them, like I said, they're called the like for me personally, I did not have to use, I got a Raw Dog my microphone because I brought my own. So I brought my own microphone and just plugged it in. And that way I didn't have to worry about using somebody else's microphone.
That's smart.
Yeah. And that way, you know, Romeo and I were able to share our microphone. I had a couple of microphones, but that way I didn't have to worry about touching anybody else's stuff or anybody touching my stuff. But a lot of people don't have microphones. So in the event that, I don't even know who came up with the whole idea of putting these rubbers on top of the microphones, the rubber caps, but I think it's brilliant. I think it's a brilliant idea. And it's something, because a lot of people, when they're talking, if you get excited, you're spitting on it or something, you should be wiping down the microphone stand, you know, the stem as well. But that was something that still should be happening. But you know, because it is still out there, and it is still something that it's the invisible boogeyman. But unfortunately, that invisible boogeyman has taken a lot of lives in the United States. Has taken over 500,000 lives. Mm-hmm. That's in a year. That is something, you know, that's very significant. I know that people talk about how they think that it's all a scam, or it's not happening because they haven't ever lost anybody. They don't see. But for those of us who personally have been
talking,
personally know somebody who, you know, like I said, one of my dear friends, coworker, who lost his grandmother, and then 2 hours later his older sister. It's very. So
do you guys think it's because Texas has never seen that much snow before that they think it's fake?
Okay, I saw. I didn't see.
I love that look.
I saw the video. I saw the video, and I was like, nobody's that stupid.
You know.
But they are.
My head fucking hurts with stupid people. Like, you know what? They need that goddamn. Where's that Trump statue? Give them the fucking Darwin Award right fucking now. Because were that fucking stupid, if you were that fucking stupid, please, for the love of God, for the love of fucking humanity, do not reproduce.
My first thought was maybe her land is contaminated.
Someone needs to turn that statue into an actual, like, into like an actual plastic award and just call it the Trumpy.
Yeah. Yeah. As you've been bamboozled. Like,
here's your sign.
I, you know what? I don't even know. I don't even think that we can go anywhere after this. We'll see y'all next week, right? Let's leave on this note.
All right. All right, folks. Thanks. My thanks to Jawan Cap. My thanks, of course, to my fabulous host, Ms. Marianne Rowley, and Cousin Todd. We will see you next week. Peace out, later, folks.
Thank you all.
Thanks for tuning into another episode of It's Not About You with Jamal and Marianne. Be sure to check them out on Facebook at Not About You Pod. That's NOTABOUT, the letter U, POD.